Messages here, and then Wider Window Poetry will take over at 10 o'clock. And so thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Como El Ere, an evening of flamenco featuring direct from Spain guitarist Carlos de Jacoba on Saturday, March 7th from 8 to 9:30 p.m. at Resound Northwest in Portland. Como El Ere featuring Diego Amador Jr. and hosted by Savannah Fuentes brings you the intense energy and emotion of flamenco. Again, that's Como El Ere, an evening of flamenco featuring direct from Spain guitarist Carlos de Jacoba on Saturday, March 7th from 8 to 9:30 p.m. at Resound Northwest, 1532 Southwest Jefferson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Live Your Dreams Party, Saturday, March 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wayfinding Academy in Portland. Live Your Dreams Party is Wayfinding Academy's annual fundraiser. This year's theme is comfort. This event will provide a welcoming environment to kick back, relax, try something new, and learn more about the Academy's mission. Again, that's Live Your Dreams Party, Saturday, March 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wayfinding Academy, 8010 North Charleston Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, and now some poetry.
Welcome to Wider Window Poetry. I'm your host, Teal Ansari, bringing you words you may not have heard from places you may not have been. And I do have a guest today, but before I get to my guest, I'm going to read a couple of poems by Tahara Safarzadeh. She was an Iranian poet, author, and translator. She was born in 1936, passed away in 2008. She was the first woman to translate the Quran into English and was one of five founding members of the International Poetry Festival's Committee on Asian Translation. And during her lifetime, she published 14 books of poetry. I'm going to read two poems by her. And the first one is from an early collection of hers titled Red Umbrella, and the poems themselves do not actually have titles, as far as I can tell. But this poem is from Red Umbrella. Invite me to a sandwich of love. I'm tired of all the big lunches, the big preparations, the big promises. Remember, I am not the woman out of Malcolm's luncheon. I am the traveler who's experienced the weight of too much baggage, who only thinks of a light snack, light stomach, light memory. Invite me to a sandwich of love. Serve me in your hands. Wrap my body in the warm paper of your breath at the table of this cold winter night. And then a later poem of hers from her collection titled Allegiance with Wakefulness in 1980. Walls have started moving. Walls have started talking. Walls of silence and surrender. Walls of servitude that hold up castles, bent walls of government. From the blessing of the attack of masses, old walls and middle-aged, these blind witnesses of yesterday's disaster, these mute witnesses of oppression and torture have just started talking. They have just started walking. But how fast they can walk, these children who have just started talking, these old people who have just started walking. Tahara Safarzadeh. Now, I would like to introduce my guest, Amelia Diaz Ettinger, who was born in Mexico and raised in Puerto Rico. Amelia has written poems that reflect the struggle with identity often found in immigrants. She began writing poetry at age 3, dictating poems out loud to the adults in her life who wrote them down for her, as she probably had not learned to write at that stage. And she has continued to write throughout her life while working as a high school science teacher. Her first book was Speaking at a Time, a book of bilingual poetry published by Red Bat Books in 2015. And former Oregon Poet Laureate Peter Sears, whom we all miss dreadfully, said, "These recollections pulse with energy and they echo the poetry of Lorca and Neruda." And Amelia has a new book about to come out from Airlie Press, which I hope we're going to hear more about in the course of the next hour. She's had poems and short stories published in journals including Willowaw, Windfall, The Avocet, A Women of Color Anthology Speaking of Ourselves, Oregon East Magazine, Hair of the Dog Anthology, and Accentos Review. Please welcome Amelia Diaz-Ettinger.
Thank you so much for having me here.
And would you like to read some poems for us?
Certainly. This poem is Speaking at a Time from my first book, Hablando a la Vez, of the same title. Webster opened on her lap. My daughter turns her pale blue eyes to me. She asks, "What is heritage?" And awaits an answer that has to reach 3,000 miles to say, "A building of cement by Dakawa's Plaza, of aunts and uncles, tios y tias, all talking at the same time, advice, admonitions, lectures on virginity, while café con leche streams in la cocina, grandfather abuelo snores his octogenarian siesta, filling the streets with majestic bellowing from three stories above so a pedestrian shouts, 'Dios mío, como ronca ese pobre diablo!' It is roasting coffee beans at 3 o'clock from La Central, the fragrance of a pregnant town, Caguas, who aches with traffic going the wrong way on a one-way street, car jams and taxis that stop to make words of love to a woman with big hips, the patience of pedestrians clearing the way for fast cars, even faster buses, el pisicorre on sidewalks. It is the tolerance and generosity from street urchins with swollen bellies who lie and steal and wish, money given freely between people. My daughter, it is a swarm of people in uniforms, filling Benitez and Luisa streets, at the factory, empties and schools let out, girls in the public played nervously eyeing the white and khaki of indifferent private boys, of men with badges and macanas, searching the roundness underneath white aprons, women rushing to get home to other work, a green and red disorder of mangoes in pickup trucks or el mercado. Mango fresquito a 10 chavos, the loudspeaker hidden in the earthy odor of tubers. Ñame, yutía, papas, todo barato. An explosion of burlap filled with habichuelas, maíz, and sorrow. It is music against music from radio, stores, houses, cars, and the boys on the sidewalk playing salsa, merengue, rumba, boleros, and rock, bongos in la plaza. And urbanizations, right, tight muscle men banging their palms to the rhythm of their dreams. Heritage is politics shouted from a moving van in neckties or guayaberas and orthodontic smiles. Vote for la estadidad, blue and white. Vote for los populares, red and white. Vote for the independence, white and hope. It is Catholicism and Santerismo. Vatican saints dressed in velvet at the cathedral, a wooden African god in your neighborhood's yard, a Latin rosary prayed in living rooms, while holy water and bay alcohol sprinkle the bed of a dying man or the shoulders of a new señorita. It is a celebration of food and sex and death in the barrio, boticario, and colmados. Hot streams of semen, olive oil, garlic, and incense, all speaking at a time to music, bongos, maracas, y güiros, and badly spoken Español. Taca detrás, chico! It is the laughter of tears and strife. It is the siren at 6 o'clock, sending people home to begin the night as the trade wind picks up and mingles with more cars and more traffic. Voicing its concern with the chorus of tree frogs. Coqui, 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 coqui. ¿De dónde vienes? ¿Pa dónde vas? It is Sundays at the horse races, holding tightly to a green paper or eating pastelillos at Luquillo Beach. While children learn to swim, the older sisters learn to make love, and matrons run to the cemetery to bring flowers to other loves. It is the warmth of a familiar tongue with Tio Carlos, Titiligia, Gisela, Marisol, who bring rum, tembleque, blood sausage in the long history behind their eyes. It is, in fact, what you, my daughter, mi hija, didn't inherit.
That's a very powerful ending, and one that, as a second-generation immigrant myself, really resonates with me. There's a lot that I did not inherit from my mother's culture. As a parent, do you feel like you were able to make some choices about what your daughter did and didn't inherit?
It was very difficult. And I think the hardest part for us was because she looked so different than me. She is a very blonde, almost white-haired girl with blue eyes. And her ethnicity had been disappeared. She remembers being in high school and being told, you can't put Hispanic in your applications to university. What, you want special privileges? And here she was, 50%. She is 50% Latinx. She is the daughter from my loins, and she cannot claim the part of her mother. And that was very painful for both my kids, because my son has the same Norwegian look that my daughter has.
Mm-hmm. So there were definitely issues with how they were perceived, you know, by other people. Were you able to communicate some of the culture to them in their upbringing?
We had the fantastic fortune that my father was able to travel for many years, and he will come to the States and stay with us for a time. So they got to have a flavor of it, and I made, when we could afford it, I would fly them to Puerto Rico with me, and we spent weeks at a time in the summers in Puerto Rico, and both of them just absolutely loved the food, the music, the family. It was very liberating for them to actually appreciate that part of their mother that otherwise they wouldn't have.
So I do want to talk some about your experience with Early Press, but maybe before we get to that, you could read some of your poems from the forthcoming book and then tell us a little bit about that process and, importantly, the release date.
Absolutely. So I have here a copy of the manuscript. So I would like to start with a very similar poem that from the one I just read. It's also about the island. This one is called Patria. My beloved, describe Patria. Homeland? Too formal. Country, no warmth. But patria is food, family, colorful hands. I shudder naming your towns Lares, Ay Bonito, Boquerón, y Caguas. Sí, it is always Caguas. I long to see your beaches, your red soil, feel your hot breath against my shoulders, to smell pasteles wrapped in green hope and plantain leaves, to kiss my old wise man and pet your bony bone dogs. I long to feel the mildew of the Caribbean, filter the marrow of cell, cement, and memory. To recall your loudspeakers shouting opportunity and despair. I long to feel that languid sun, extreme, suffocating, ruptures, transforming our men, arrogant and loud, with desires beyond your narrow width, who dance and drink, love and think with the intensity of your sky that limits nothing, that wear guayaberas and play dominoes and make love with just a look. Your mothers and girls, humble and strong, who run in a rhythm of heels and steel, making and marking, keeping you afloat in the perfume of your rifleness, in full lips and whispers, a future as uncertain as an eyelash, but makes you believe in God and children and there's no other earth. Beloved Patria, how is to be you, especially now, when your children flee, your soil is left behind in empty lots, the hum, lost verses of a mute song in the Caribbean breeze, this song of farewell. Another poem that I have, which is actually nothing to do with in this new book from early, is also talking about aging. So I have one on a youth in the gym. A gray woman undresses. Her skirted bathing suit, a crumpled garden underfoot. She reached for a towel and froze. An Athenian statue of draped flesh, one unmanicured thick hand searching in circles on her downcast like prayer breasts, the all concerned with health. Her knowing fingers like hands explore tierra incognita of thin space and crumbled paper. Finish. She sighs and grabs a towel. With that, the woman froze. My hands go to my breast like magnets, confirming firmness and strength, anchoring roundness, not ready to let go. Here is a poem from the book that is going to be published by Early Press in October. This is called A Decima in Grand Ron. Decima is a form of poetry from Puerto Rico. I see winter sledding softly, Mount Emily greeting the green valley, kissing the ground with frost, and I return to see your lips. Clouds roll unto themselves as they begin their descent on Grand Ronde Valley under our mountains. You said the sky won't be a cornflower, but your arms around me never were. The top of the mountain is gone, asleep under a gray blanket, mocking the feelings we once held above all others. All three of us lay dormant in the silence. Winter is under the white sky, no leaves left to see, colors exchange for the warmth, reds and orange feelings turn to dark gray. Those words we exchanged kept sledding us into us. The sky no longer holds, and the frozen soil is hard. Promises no longer true.
So this book is coming out from early in October, and what is the title of it?
Learning to Love a Western Sky.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about Early Press and what that experience has been like for you.
Early Press is a collaborative of writers. We have a selection process that starts in June. June 1st is open for people to apply from the Northwest. It's usually from the Pacific Northwest. And two books are selected to be published. And the authors become editors for the press. And they help select the national prize. We have one national prize coming out right now that will close in March. So it is a collaborative press. It's being wonderful. It's a lot of work, but it's really worth the time. You get to see from the inside the process of publishing.
Okay, I'd like you to read some of your earlier poetry, and then I have some more interview questions.
So in this book that is coming, it's separated in kind of in themes, mm-hmm. and one of them is about relationships. And this one, I'm also a scientist, so this one, a minor in chemistry, so this is about the chemist. The chemist thinks of her love as an ionic bond, but wonders who does the stealing. Their polarization evident from the start, different levels and all that, but worse when the relentless water drips under metal roof, a tiltration of gray. Time supplies each color in silent sighs and vacant glances, a kiss with the substance of an electron. Staring at her skin, the chemist wishes the blood underneath will rush, creating a magnetic field. Will that bind him stronger? Passion is real. Orbits of energy releasing heat, no light but sounds, like ancients forgotten, like the ether that used to inhabit the cavity of bone and skin and void. Covalence might be in other homes, other sentences. Carbon to carbon was not their destiny. She plays with a mote of dust and wonders, I don't matter as it rises. The last poem in the book is actually a very personal poem from a friend of ours in high school that actually had to disappear from this private school. To NC before you disappeared. The years march indifferent, your chisel beauty, eyes so black, or runs after school under incandescent sun, you stain the Catholic white of your uniform with sweat. The neighborhood pharmacy so close to home, an oasis, its air-conditioned interior a safe cave, away from your father's eyes. You reading behind the shelves, Wonder Woman and of course Superman, until caught, laughing with the abandon of a girl just 13, mouthful of stolen candy. Who else knew? Your name was scratched from morning roll call, yet whispered as a snake crawl. Girls huddling in tight groups, floating stories with the density of a stone. Who will play the guitar of the student show or fill the bathroom with your laughter? Force to be a sister to your own child.
That's very powerful.
It's one of those things when you're a child, you never get over. And I never saw her again. None of us did.
That's very sad.
So let me see if I can find one that is not so depressing. Because there are some that are... There are some that are odes, but they're a little long. But there is an ode that I would not mind sharing. Nicolas Guillen is an Afro-Cuban poet that I grew up listening to him at the noon show. Wow. And the television. He would read his poetry, and he was very onomatopoetic, and he was just absolutely magnificent. Ode to Nicolas Guillen, Sensemaya. How would it be to hear the song that kills the snake? Would it be the whistle of goat hooves spinning on a dancer's neck? The sounds of distant drums from your glorious pen. Sensemaya, Sensemaya. Generations, follow your path to the snakes. Your rhythm forge in Africa, your yearning light that makes roots by the red soil and the grass to hide the snake, the land, the music, the food of your forefathers, balm of Cuba in every stanza, your words a gift to El Caribe Negro, now cast in mortar and steel. Could this Caribbean see the snake's glass eyes? Hear Mayombe Bombe, sing your song to kill the snake. Mayombe Bombe, Mayombe Bombe, Mayombe.
So that's a great segue to, I wanted to ask you about some of the early literary influences that you remember. You say that you started composing poetry at 3.
Yes.
And maybe you don't remember what you were reading or hearing at that age, but what are some of the literary influences that you do remember? Obviously, the poem you just read alludes to some.
You know, I had the fortune of having, growing up in a house with my father, two of his brothers, and my grandfather, and it was kind of a competition between them to remember poetry lines. And one will start and the other will follow, and it will never stop. And then at the noon, we had the noon show. The television, we didn't eat until 1. So the noon show was at right at 12, from 12 to 1, we sat in the living room and watched that program that had a lot of Puerto Rican music, but it also attracted a lot of Puerto Rican and Cuban poets. And they will read their poetry, and I was mesmerized by the rhythms. Pales Matos was one of my favorites and kind of a regular in the show, and he was the Puerto Rican poet that, similar to Guillen, did a lot of onomatopoeic poetry. And I had this little notebook where my uncles wrote everything that I was, I have a poem, and they will write it down. Unfortunately, I lost that little book on a flood, but I memorized one. I have one that I have memorized, and I can recite it for you if you want to. It's in Spanish. Una estrella brilló en el cielo con tanto y tanto esplendor que cuando la gente la vio, todo el mundo se asombró. La estrella se cayó y una niñita la recogió. Mas cuando en sus brazos la vio, una muñeca se le volvió. It's about a little girl seeing a star falling down, picking it up, and it was a doll.
Wow.
It rhymed.
I gathered that. Although I don't speak a word of Spanish myself, the rhythm and the rhyme comes through. So how is poetry carried on? I mean, many people, or at least some people, sort of dabble in poetry as a child or a teenager and then sort of leave it behind. You obviously have carried it on. Has it been constant throughout your education, your adult life, your work life?
No, it wasn't. I think I maintained reading poetry, but during the years as a high school teacher, I had very little time to write because I have two teenagers there, and between the children's extra academic curriculums and me teaching full time, there was little time for writing until pretty much 2014, that a friend of mine remember me writing, and he says, "You still have your bilingual poems?" And I go, "Yeah, I have them." And he says, "Would you come to Pendleton to read some of them?" Peter Sears, the poet laureate at the time, he wanted to have somebody, some voice from Eastern Oregon that was writing in two different languages. And I said, sure. I presented them, and that was the beginning of a beautiful, very, very, unfortunately, very short friendship with Peter. And he kind of took me under his wing, and that's how I came back to poetry.
Peter was a real gentleman. We miss him a lot.
Yes.
So you didn't make much use of it in teaching of poetry when you were teaching.
I did.
You did.
I did. I put my 2 cents worth in there for the kids. It's hard to do it in the first, because I taught science, but I also was a Spanish teacher. In my Spanish 3 class, I used to have them read Neruda's odes, and selected, because of course, you know, Neruda can be very sensual and sexual, and it's not approved by a lot of the parents. So I would select some of Neruda and Lorca, some of my favorite poems that would be applicable for their age, and then I had them write their own odes. Mm-hmm. And we used to publish a little pamphlet that we gave to the parents at the end of their 3 years of Spanish, and it was lovely. So I did maintain it, and I kind of, without them knowing, I was just pushing them a little bit that way too.
David Hedges, who was formerly president of the Oregon Poetry Association and founded the student poetry contest that OPA runs every year, was once told by the superintendent of an Oregon school district, which I won't name, that he wasn't having any poetry in the schools of that city because poetry is subversive. And of course, if you know David, he took that as an immense compliment.
Absolutely. And poetry should be subversive. He needs to wake us up.
So I want to explore a little more the bilingual aspect. And I've had a couple of poets on this show who are functionally bilingual or multilingual, and they all seem to experience it in different ways. So I'm curious to know, you know, you obviously don't separate your poems. This is a poem in English, this is a poem in Spanish. You more mix it together. Do you feel that you think in both languages simultaneously?
Do you know, that's a fantastic question, and I always wonder that. I think there are moments when I realize that my thoughts might be comparable to a person that does not have language. If you consider being blind, deaf, and mute, like Helen Keller, she obviously had thoughts, yeah, without words. And I think sometimes the brain of a bilingual or trilingual person functions akin to that, where you have the whole thought, but not in necessarily a language. And I find myself thinking about the language as I'm thinking, particularly when I travel. If I go to the island, then I have to be involved in the language and the different rhythm of the people. Because here in the States, I mainly talk to my Mexican friends, and Puerto Rico is totally different new jargon that you have to get used to. And then I find myself consciously thinking in the language. And then the transition back to the States, I do the same, consciously thinking in English. But then in the majority of the time, I think thought is so rapid that you don't even have time to think about it in terms of language. Does that even make sense?
Yeah, so the thought comes and then later maybe it attaches itself to words.
Exactly.
That have to be in one language or another, or perhaps a mix of both. Do you feel like there's a different voice to your poetry or your parts of poems that are written in Spanish versus written in English?
That's another good question. I think when I sometimes force myself for a while to write in Spanish, because 90% of the time I write in English, I find that when I'm writing in Spanish, it has a different, maybe not sound, but flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when I force myself to write in my native language, to go to a more youthful, almost innocent voice, that not so mature, not so jagged, maybe is the word.
Perhaps not 3 years old, but definitely
no.
Younger.
I tend to go more to a adolescent voice.
So, and you have, obviously, many of your readers don't speak both the languages that you do. How have your publishers addressed that in the course of producing a book? You know, do we want to put in a translation? Are there footnotes?
Actually, for my first book, I had turned in the manuscript only in English. And it was the publisher that said, no, we want this to be a bilingual book. Can you translate your poems into Spanish? And I thought, oh, that's a piece of cake. Well, I reread Robert Bly's essay on the 7 or 11 steps of translation. I don't remember exactly the title. It's more than 200 steps of translation, and you never feel totally satisfied with it. So it took me an extra year to get the book done, because I translated every poem except one that is called Without Translation.
And that was Redbat Books. So there's an English and a Spanish version of each poem facing pages?
Yes, that's correct.
And how is Early addressing that?
In Early, I don't have, because I think learning to love a Western sky, to me, is my book of transition. By the title, it's my assimilation to the Western landscape, feeling myself beginning to be more and more a Western writer than a Puerto Rican one. So the poems here, they have a little bit of salt and pepper on it of Spanish words, but no poems are in Spanish.
And you sent me a sample poem about the World Cup. Do you happen to have that?
Yes,
one
that one happens to be in this anthology by called Terra Incognita by Bob Hill Publishing, and which is inappropriate today is the Super Bowl, so it is
right.
So it's an appropriate poem thinking about sports and the way that we pick up teams and decide to divide ourselves by whether you're Chiefs or San Francisco 49ers, mm-hmm. Right? For me, football also is soccer.
Right.
So this one is called The World Cup is Too Full. The World Cup is too full, and life should be a football game. Us versus an open green field. Rules all set. Screams from fans, not children torn from mother's arms at a border. Look from the moon. What border? The furor of heartbeats set upon a goal, not the explosive that tore the neighborhood. The smell of rockets overhead, the blues, the reds, just lines. Colorful smoke that adheres to flags. Lines made single file, crossing the turnstile. And those of youngsters with hands over their heads, an alien might confuse the two for the same. The suffocating loudness of crowds, dust, and bloodstones, even the power of seeing the abandoned shoe among the detritus, a skeleton of a horse covering lime, camouflage and lost in all the painted, covered, and torn faces. Made for this moment, rules all set, a border of heat, a child cries loudly a name, and no one hears a sound.
So I bring that up, that poem, particularly in this context of change of language and change of culture, and particularly because, you know, the poem refers to football, but the title, The World Cup, should guide us towards thinking of soccer. And so there's that confusion because, of course, the rest of the world refers to soccer as football, and American mm-hmm. football is an extremely violent game, much more so than soccer. So in reading that poem, if you picture the metaphor with football versus the American football versus the metaphor with soccer, I think it gives a somewhat different feel to the poem. And I wonder if you were sort of playing off that as a resident of both cultures, and of course knowing that this was going to be a somewhat ambiguous word to an American reader, do you use that sort of cultural conflict or cultural contrast in your poems?
Sometimes I do. A little of confusion sometimes kind of also brings down to the confusion of the culture. And so sometimes a little play with words like that is tongue-in-cheek, mm-hmm. but it's meant to be taken seriously, too.
Do you have a couple of poems with you that illustrate that?
Right off the top of my head, I can't... trying to think of one. Not directly to it, but I think this poem addresses the confusion within both cultures mm-hmm. of understanding place and it's understanding time and understanding how does a person fit. And this one is called In the Needle of a Cactus, The Lies We Tell. I was white until I was not, in an unemployment office with a flag. The man smelled of tired tobacco and disdain. You're not, and tore the application in half. Why are you running? A slow police car wakes me from my reverie, running in these Palouse hills, Ecru hills, soft and beguiling as a woman's breast. I did not slow. I sung this song, La linda manita que tiene el bebé. A woman in North Carolina looks at me and spits. You're in America. Speak American to that white kid. My baby's laughter falters as I pick my son to leave. He is mine, I want to say. The courage leaves me as I brush dirt off him. The little innuendos that transform of a self to a nickel and dime standard form. You're a hot lad in red-blooded tempered. The weary list of cliches goes on one after another. To live in the needle of a cactus is to feel the dryness of a distant star.
And this poem is also in Terra Incognita.
Yeah, this one is also in Terra Incognita.
Okay, so I'd like to hear some more poetry, maybe another 4 or 5 poems. And then I'm going to ask you a completely random question.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's see. This one says that I don't write enough poetry about him. But I do. And this one is called San Juan's Night. San Juan's Night is, of course, a Puerto Rican celebration for the saint. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why we do this, but we go at midnight and jump in the ocean backwards on our backs. I don't know what is done, but it's supposed to kind of bring good luck or something. And I was in Puerto Rico with my children one night, and it is San Juan's Night. On a different ocean, my children dance, hands enveloped in foam. Their rhythm is a moonbeam from youth. My son with wonder yells, "Mom, look!" In the black horizon, we see a night whale breaking the surface. Calmness among the carnival. One of my favorite holidays is Day of the Dead. Even though in Puerto Rico we don't celebrate it the same way as in Mexico and in some parts of Mexico, we do go to the cemetery and place stones on the stones, play flowers, and clean the crypt. We don't have that here. But I do have a meadow next to my house. Día de los Muertos, Noviembre 1 a 2. Dew covers this gray day. Light struggles to reach the ground. But cold has no trouble filling space with living remains. Cold whispers its name, a night in the coyote's call. A dawn, the bugling elk. The slowing heartbeat of a dying friend. Autumn of fog, the meadow, covered by smoke screen of images so real. Father and child in an eternal dance, their forlorn silence taste of mold, incense, and marigolds. There are no altars this far north, no carpets of yellow petals to lead the way. Could they find their way? Cold then becomes the friend, a blue enduring hand that sits and stills a shoulder. Dew now descends, the maple, home, and fervor, and give rest to our memories. So let's see, that one was in the early book. And I've been thinking a lot about Puerto Rico these days. It's just hard not to.
I understand.
And this earthquake has really, there is a shame that comes to be an expatriate, mm-hmm. and the shame of not being there and giving a hand. It feels so selfish. The only thing I can do is remember the beauty of it and put it down in paper. So this poem is also about Puerto Rico. This one is called Relative Light. Here it is again, that light, familiar and foreign, that enters my Oregon window, smelling of Jackie's tea and British cakes, of my aunt's embroidery, her quiet conversations. Light that sings like a mountain, cascade or cordillera, that scatters air like colibri or magpie. It is my son's light as he ponders his new life, light of my father's dead eyes, appraising eyes. Here it is again, the light that feeds the worms of childhood and waltzes the dust particles of age, the light that enters with the warmth of a quiet perfume wrapped in my beautiful Myra's hair, tasting of ancient summers balancing on swings. This is the light that wraps time in my daughter's laughter, the texture of a river escapes and first kisses, a brilliance gentle as a thought that rouses a volcano.
Will you do me a favor, since this book was in Speaking at a Time, mm-hmm. and read the Spanish version?
Certainly, of the same one?
Yes.
Let me find it again. Luz familiar. Aquí está otra vez esa luz, familiar y forastera, que entra por mi ventana de Oregón, que huele al té y los pasteles británicos de Jackie, del bordado de mi tía, sus conversaciones calladitas, luz que canta como una montaña, cascade o cordillera, que dispersa el aire como un colibrí o el magpie. Es la luz de mi hijo sopesando su vida nueva, luz evaluadora de los ojos de mi padre muerto. Aquí está otra vez la luz que se alimenta de los gusanos de la infancia y balce las partículas de polvo de los años. Esta luz que entra con el calor de perfume tranquilo envuelto en el cabello de mi bella Mayra, que sabe a veranos de antaño balanceándonos en columpios. Esta luz que envuelve al tiempo en la risa de mi hija, la textura de escapadas a ríos y los primeros besos. Un brillo apacible como un pensamiento que despierta a un volcán.
Let's have a couple more poems.
Well, I'm going to read from Tierra Incognita because I think a lot of these poems in here are so appropriate for the times that we're living.
Mm-hmm. And can you say a couple of words about Bob Hill Publishing? Because they're local, at least they're Oregon.
Yeah, they're Oregon. And this particular book, Tierra Incognita, is a collection of Oregon poets that are writing for political and economic justice. Mm-hmm. So that was the theme of the book. And they sent an open invitation, and a lot of the Oregon poems and people you will recognize looking at the names are in here. I think it was a response to a lot of people feeling a certain amount of despair and confusion in our times. And so we wrote to that in this book. And this one, A White Child in the New America, is from my grandson, who just turned 6. Dimples rest at the base of each callous free finger. They are as white as a dandelion seed, but my weather olive paw swallows them whole. Hand in hand, we cross the streets, his a total trust. A speeding car flies by too close, his trust, my folly, yet he laughs. We look at treats as we pass, strolling slowly at his pace. He wants everything he sees. Time has not limited his hunger. His wants, my fears. A blue butterfly lands on a dirty wall, maybe an omen, for now, just an insect. We watch it open and close its wings. They remind me of his eyelids. Suddenly, it flies away with abandon, just like this child's dreams. He was that kid that asked me, where is the mirror? After sitting in my lap for a while. I said, well, it's in my bedroom. Go and check it. So I follow him without him notice. And he goes to the mirror and opens his eyes really big and starts looking at them. And he comes back to me and he goes, but my eyes are not brown like yours.
Oh.
Okay. This one, I think I wrote in 2016. After a bike ride. I'm a mountain biker too. It's called Vulgarization. The old cowgirl rides up her mountain on two fat wheels and wonders. What happened to men in fedoras? They seem to be gone after Vietnam. Culture men, gracious, solicitous, lathering cologne, disappeared with a black and white TV. Host was striving for that special word, Walter Conrad, the most trusted man in America. She takes a long breath and sits at a picnic table. At 6,000 feet, her chosen town below looks so small. With a hand over the panorama, she can erase it. The colors of the town, the chimney smokes, the quiet streets. If she cries right now, who will hand her a handkerchief? Fedoras and handkerchiefs lost in one small generation. Grand Run kitchens still cook a homemade meal. A sweet inhalation for the cowgirl. She wants to stop the exodus of gallant words. The man addressing the nation is not what you can do. Her chest feels laden with muck, just as her tires. Mud has hardened on them, but at least it is Mount Emily's mud. She thinks as she mounts her track.
For our volunteer and outreach coordinator position, we're looking for someone with experience in volunteer management and outreach to diverse communities and preferably has experience with nonprofits. This is a full-time position. For the full job description and instructions on how to apply, see the job listing on our website at kbu.fm/employment. Applications are due Saturday, March 22nd by 5 p.m. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of We Are All Indians Now, an art exhibition by Stephen Johnson Leyba on Friday, March 6th from 6 to 11:30 p.m. at the AFRU Gallery in Portland. We Are All Indians Now is a mixed-media art exhibition that explores Leyba's passion in Native American roots. The artist will share a live performance at 7 p.m. The exhibit will continue from 2 to 6 p.m. on weekends to the end of March. Again, that's We Are All Indians Now, an art exhibition by Stephen Johnson Leyba, on Friday, March 6th from 6 to 11 p.m. at the AFRU Gallery, 534 Southeast Oak Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feet to Fire campaign and protest on Friday, March 20th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse in Portland. The Feet to Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside of a different county courthouse and calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes, particularly those who were in a mental health crisis when they were killed by police. Again, that's Feet to the Fire campaign and protest on Friday, March 20th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse, 1021 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On 90.7. Welcome to Stories with Stella. And my name is Stella. I'll be the host of this little series. And today I have with me my roommate and very good friend, Hazel. And she's going to be joining me. And we both started dancing as strippers together about 4 years ago. And so a lot of my stories are going to be involving strippers and sex workers of all different varieties, coming in to give me a little bit of what they know about their industry and offering some different perspectives. I've been a dancer for about 4 years. I started in Eugene, Oregon, and came up to Portland about 2 years ago. And it's been quite of an adventure of all the different kinds of clubs that are out there. But